Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Welcome to Face to Face. This is a show about change and about what's next. It's a show that wants to ask questions, peel back the layers of our average everyday experience, and go beyond scratching the surface. We interview amazing people with incredible ideas and stories who have done wild, weird, and wonderful things. Remember that imagination shared creates collaboration, and collaboration creates community, and community inspires social change. I'm David Peck, and this is Face to Face. So my next conversation was with Amr Salema. His new film, Sheik Jackson, is going to be playing at the Toronto International Film Festival. Once again, a world premiere. What a funny, charming, brilliant, beautiful film. You absolutely need to see it. I think you're going to hear a lot about this. It's just so much fun. It's entertaining. It's intimate. It's insightful. And yes, you got it. It's about Michael Jackson and his impact in a very conservative Islamic family. And so we get into things, we talk about identity and passion and belief and parenting. We talk about memories and about cinematic language, and we talk about fundamentalism, you know, kind of a global fundamentalism, I guess you could say. We get into conversation about shame and guilt and about outsiders and how we can include others, imagination. We talk about TED Talks and Ken Robinson. We talk about, you know, how we seem to be always, you know, how we're always coming to be, you know, this idea that our identity is always in flux. I think you're gonna fall in love with this film. You need to get out and see it. And again, world premiere at the Toronto International Film Festival. Amr Salema coming right up. Sheik Jackson. Don't forget davidpecklive.com for more information about my speaking and writing, etc. And also face-to-facelive.ca for more, all of my interviews, and of course rabble.ca as well for a whole lot more political and social insight there. So coming right up, Amr Salema and Sheik Jackson.
Well, welcome to Face to Face. We are joined by another very special guest here today. We have another filmmaker with us here today to talk about his new film, Sheik Jackson. It's premiering at the Toronto International Film Festival, and we have Amr Salema here with us today to have a conversation. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, and thank you for pronouncing my name just right for a foreigner.
So I actually got it right today.
Yeah, you did.
Excellent. So where are you sitting today as we have this conversation? Huh?
I'm actually sitting in my living room in Cairo watching MTV.
Watching MTV in Cairo. How appropriate with respect to the film and the story. And we're gonna do our best not to talk too much about the story, I think, today in our conversation. But can you tell us a little bit more about Sheik Jackson? And I think if you're okay with it, I'm just gonna read a little bit of the synopsis. The sudden death of Michael Jackson sends a former king of pop devotee, now a young imam, into a tailspin. And before we even get into anything, I just want to say congratulations. And what a remarkable, beautiful, insightful film.
Thank you so much. I think this is the biggest step in my career so far, being in Toronto and special presentation, having all this attention for my film. So I'm really glad. And on the other hand, I'm really anxious and I'm really expecting too much. So I hope my expectations will not be devastated after the festival.
Right. No, I'm no prophet, but I have to say, I think Toronto audiences are going to absolutely love your film. It's, as I said, it's beautiful and it's intimate and it's just, it's so deeply relational and just so really funny. It's got some wonderful, charming comedic moments. Where does a movie like this start? Are you an MTV nut? Is that where it comes from? Are you just somebody who has been immersed in pop culture all your life?
I think one of the best thing and the worst things that happened to me in my life is being a fan of pop music. I believe since I was 16, I was like always waiting for my parents to sleep so I can open MTV and like watch all the music videos and especially Michael Jackson songs back then. I remember that was 1995 or something. I was so in love with pop music and rock music, especially in the 90s and all this wave of the new boy bands back then and everything. But the film, the story with the film, to tell it like I should, it started with somebody calling me, or someone I know calling me and telling me there's this new writer, you have to speak to him, he has a couple of ideas. So we had a short phone call, and he told me, like, at the beginning of the phone call, my name is Omar Khaled, and I have this idea for a script. It's about a guy who's a Salafist. Salafist is like a very religious, strict Muslim who's in love with Michael Jackson. And, like, I remember I said, like, I'm doing this film, like, right away. Please, I'm doing this film. Did you write the script? And he told me, no, I just wrote the treatment. So I read the treatment, so I called him back again, like, after 3 minutes and told him, like, man, this is almost my memoir. At one point in my life, I was a Michael Jackson fanatic. At one point in my life, I was religious when I was young, and I really want to write the script. It will almost be like writing a memoir. So I thought that's the easiest part, to write a script that's based on my personal experience. And I then discovered in this 3 years journey of writing the script that it was the hardest thing to turn your memoir into a film, a drama, a script, something that's not too self-indulgent and people can connect with.
Do you think that what made it so hard is that you were so connected to the story, or did that actually make it a bit easier because it was part autobiography?
No, it made it very hard because I was so self-indulgent. I remember, like, I always write my scripts like 100 pages. I always do it like I finish, I put the word, the end, on the page 100. This time, I remember the first draft was like 350 pages, and was like, wow, this is a book, this is not a film. And it took me 11 drafts,
wow,
complete drafts, to find a cinematic language, to find an interesting plot, to make this film a film.
Well, for what it's worth, Merim, I think you nailed it on the 11th script.
I hope so.
So you say that any great film for me, any great story, you know, any great book that you read or a poem that you read has a variety of layers and meets us on different levels. This is a film for me that made me laugh out loud, made me glad to be human. Made me want to look into Michael Jackson more. I'm not a huge Michael Jackson fan, and I know there's probably millions around the world that would be pretty concerned about that. But there's a thread. There's this beautiful thread, relational thread that runs throughout your piece, and it's anything but self-indulgent. So I hope in whatever way that helps alleviate maybe some of your fears. But this is a film about identity. It's a film about religion and moralism, and there's a tiny political edge to the film. There's a global perspective here. This is about loving others. This is about reaching out. This is about, you know, leveling the playing field. Can you talk to me a little bit about that? Was that a desire for you to try to have so many touch points for people to dive into, or did that just kind of flow out of the writing?
Actually, when I was writing, I'm very systematic when I write. So the first thing I do is have this paper where I put them, like, in the middle of the paper inside a big circle, what's the main theme of the film.
Mm.
And I remember when I started doing that, I wrote identity. That was the first
right.
And that was helping me actually to make the film shorter and more focused and everything. But I found out that the identity is just a big umbrella. Under this umbrella, you have a lot of other themes, because what is an identity? It's your beliefs, it's your passions, it's your loved ones, it's your memories, it's your relationship with your parents, it's a lot of things.
Yeah.
So it was another challenge to make this film focused and not be talking about too many themes. So the hardest part was like to make sure that the film is about identity first and last, and then a couple of other stuff that related to identity. So that's why I wrote the script. And to be completely honest, before that film, I was a bit in like a limbo where I thought like, where I'm going with my career. I had a couple of existential crises, and like I thought like I should write something that really touched me and like something that I'm really passionate about. And when this idea came to me from Omar, my co-writer, I thought like, wow, this is exactly what I want to write it now, because it's almost therapeutic writing this film and making this film.
So is this your reaction to your religious upbringing? And I too share that. Clearly, I would imagine different religions, but similar approaches in a sense. This idea of black and white, this idea of right and wrong. I'm going to talk a little bit about the watch that he wears. You know, the good deeds versus the bad deeds. There was a lot of that in my upbringing, and I think a lot of us are working through some of those. You know, some of those implications. Does that make sense?
Of course. I was raised in Saudi Arabia. I was brought up on a very like strict Islamic interpretation. I remember like the image of God I had when I was young is the image of a God who's vindictive, who's like a father figure, a patriarchal figure. So it took me a long time just to get out of that, and like it took me a long time just to see how bad it is to look at God in that way, because it always makes you feel shameful and guilty. And you always have remorse. You always have a bad self-image of yourself that you're not good enough.
Right.
So that was a part in my life when I was young. I remember I was like that in like when I was in my first years of college. This film was actually like making peace with all my past selves. So all of those guys in the film are my past selves in a way. So I was making peace with them, like exactly like the therapist talk to him in the films.
Right.
That was the same conversation I had with my own therapist a while ago, like a couple of years ago, when she said, like, you really have to make peace with your past selves. So this film was about that.
I wonder, you know, it's really insightful to me from a religious or a theological perspective, in the sense that I wonder to what degree so many of us have, whether you believe in a God or not, but if you were raised in that kind of a family, how many of us actually can't seem to get a more loving or a more relational or a more inclusive understanding of God, because we are raised in a family or with a father who's, you know, emotionally detached or abusive or just not really that good of a guy. You know what I mean?
I totally understand that. Actually, my own father was like the kindest person on the planet. He's nothing like the father in the film. The father in the film is inspired by a father of a friend who actually the friend who taught me about Michael Jackson. My own father was like really, really moderate, and he was the kindest person on earth. He just passed away like 2 months ago. And my mother was almost the same. So actually my religion, my relationship with religion was never based on what my parents told me. It was more based on what society tells me. I was raised in school in Saudi Arabia. I was taught about religion here in Cairo when I came back from France, from sheikhs and imams, and how this interpretation was so sexy. When you want to be a rebel, you want to be like you want to find a new identity, you want to like belong to an ideology.
Sure.
So I remember in the first years of college, I got introduced to the scene of Salafism. Which is like the if I want to translate Salafi or Salafism, it's like orthodox. It's like
okay, yeah.
fundamentalist version of
Islam. Yeah, fundamentalism. It's all condition. It's all based on rules.
Yes, exactly. And it's about the points. It's always about the points.
About the points. Yeah, I love the tension. I love the dialogue throughout the whole film about living life versus, you know, the afterlife, the infinity, you know, divided by zero. There's just so many beautiful ways that there's a joy to living life here and now.
Yes, exactly. I remember that phrase, what if you divide any number by infinity? That was actually the same phrase that got me into this trend. And got me super religious at one time. I was like 19 years old, but I got really indulged in that scene for like 1 year or two, until I pulled myself out and started studying everything and being more analytical about everything that I want to believe in.
You know, the performances in the film are astounding. They really are. I mean, it clearly speaks to your what you create on the set and the intimacy you have with your writer and your actors and the relationships and so on. It's really quite marvelous. But there's many scenes that really drew me in. But there's one really beautiful scene where the young, Michael Jackson fan, the devotee, as you call him, says the reason he loves this young woman is because of her facial expressions. And there's just this beautiful sort of unpacking of him while he's watching her, I think play the piano. I don't know if you can get much more human than that, Amar. I don't know if you can, and yet that's what the world around him, that's what the culture around him, his family and his religion was telling him to basically deny, to walk away from.
Yes. I don't want to spoil too much, but that was one of the scenes I love. I remember that's because, again, this is all based on a personal experience. I remember this girl in my high school days where, I loved her so much. Like, for 3 years, we never actually talked more than two words. And, this is I have, the statement in the beginning of the film where it says, to the people I created with memories with, and you know who you are, because literally every character in the film is based on somebody that I knew, or a friend or an acquaintance that I knew before.
It's really quite remarkable. To what degree, how much is this film about including others, about accepting others, about prejudice and being able to empathize?
The funny thing is, I remember discussing maybe the ninth draft with my producer and my mentor, Muhammad Hafzi. I was discussing with him a new draft, and he was like, Amr, you know what? You know that three of your last films were about including others. It's about the other. It's about understanding the other. And I was like, wow, that's the common theme I was searching for. I never knew what is the common theme in my films generally. So I understood that this is it, because maybe when I try to analyze it and go back to my memories and my history and why am I concerned with this topic of including the other, I remember I was always the outsider in my life. I was in Saudi Arabia, I was the Egyptian kid in the class. I remember when I came back, I went to a public school, so I became the guy who's a filthy rich who came from Saudi Arabia. Then I went to a private school, so I was this poor kid who came from a public school. And then I went to study accounting, so I was the artist guy in accounting. And then I went to be a filmmaker, so I became the accountant who wants to be a filmmaker. And even my political and religious views, everything makes me feel always like an outsider, like I really don't belong to a gang or like a cult or something. I'm always special. That's a nice word for it, but the other word for it is an outsider. So I always felt like an outsider on the other. So maybe that's why I'm always making films about the other.
Well, you do it so beautifully, and it's so understated. This is the kind of what I love about your film is this is the kind of film that you can just walk out of a theater and go, "Wow, that was great! I feel like I'm a better human being because I saw that film." But you as a film student, you could unpack this film and write pages about the implications and about the issues that you're raising in such a subtle a way. I love the fact that you use one of Michael Jackson's songs to kind of communicate that too, in a really wonderful scene that includes a Sony Walkman. And I have to say, Amir, I had a Sony Walkman, so you pulled me in that scene as well.
I remember to get that exact Sony Walkman I had when I was a kid.
Yeah.
I made a call online on Twitter. I have like 2.5 million followers on Twitter. So I made a call like, I really want this exact Walkman when it was like yellow and this and that.
Mine was yellow too, just so you know.
Yeah. Wow. So I got actually 3 from my followers. They sent me 3 of those. And I was so touched when I, especially that scene. I was so touched, and I never act the scene to my actors before I start shooting it, but this was the only time I did that. I showed the actor exactly how I felt when I got the first tape from Michael Jackson, exactly how I put it in the Walkman, exactly how I played with it, exactly how I was not able, my English was so bad, so I was not able to sing with Michael Jackson because he's singing so fast. So it was like, all I want to say that they don't really care about us. I couldn't say that. So it's like, all I want to say is that they don't really, he always like, I never catch him. So it was very fun. It was super funny shooting that scene with the actor Ahmed Malik, and he did it beautifully. And whenever I see that scene, it's like, this is exactly a memory that I have.
Would you say you're still working through some of those cultural and societal issues that you were raised with? Is this still a part of who you are? I mean, so many different, this film is about an identity crisis. And that's something we all face. Every one of us, it seems, at some point in our life has to say, who am I? Where am I heading? Am I going to walk into my freedom? Am I going to avoid it? Am I going to, you know, and we make these choices, freedom, choice, and responsibility, and so on. To what degree would you say, or that you might be willing to say, that you're still working through some of this stuff?
On a personal level?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, yep. Clearly, yeah. You know, I'm actually kind of surprised, Amir, that you say that, you know, that this film is a memoir, that you're willing to admit that right out of the gate.
Yeah, yeah. No, I think I made peace with the fact that I think I made peace with being in crisis. I don't know, but I mean, like, what really made me calm myself down about having any identity crisis is that identity is a flux. It's never written in stone. It's something that changes over time. So it's okay to be changing. It's okay to be always discovering yourself. Because actually, it's boring if you know who you are exactly and you can write it on paper, because that means you're dead. That's the end of the story. So I'm really in peace with the fact that I'm always changing. Identity is a flux thing. It's always molding into other shapes. So I'm okay with that now. Like, I'm less tense. I'm less angry about the fact that I can't label myself. I'm actually more proud of myself that I can't label myself. And I'm not worried that I don't know who am I exactly, because actually nobody does. And this is a big illusion. If you think who you are, that's a big illusion. You really don't know who you are, and it's a journey of self-discovery until the moment you cease to exist. You're always discovering who you are.
And isn't, you know, it's wonderful how you tease that out, because I think it really is a discovery. We're never quite there. We're always moving forward. We're always taking steps into the future. But don't we actually realize that ultimately in a community with others? With our partners, our husbands, our wives, our families, our children, and so on.
Yes, it was a bit of a pressure to me that I want to like tell people who I am, and I want to like expose a certain self-image to people who know that I am this or that. But now I less care. I care less about this. I really don't care right now what people, how people perceive me, which version of me they perceive me, because usually people like judge you on their experience with you, not on exactly who you are. So no matter who you are, they always judge you based on their own experience, how they felt about you, what happened with them from you. So I'm less tense now, I can say. I'm not a Buddhist monk, but I'm more in peace with the fact that I cannot control how people see me.
Yeah, you're okay with uncertainty, and it sounds like to me. And I think that's part of the problem. It's so interesting that there's that subtext of sort of that mental health almost subtext, and which is deeply connected to identity crisis for sure. And I wonder to what degree we can kind of not blame religion for that, but this, the way that society, religion, you know, school, you know, even the learning of something as important as mathematics can set us up for good and bad, you know, that the polarization of good and evil and right and up and down and here and there. Does that make sense?
Of course. And what I can say is that if you ask, like, we have around like 1.25 billion Muslims in the world. If you ask each of them what is Islam, you will have 1 billion answers. I mean, if you,
same with any other religion, it seems to me.
Same with any other religion. And every person in the world has a different image of God. Some of them look at God as a provider. Some look at God as a bodyguard. Some look at God as a punisher. So it all depends on your psyche, on your interpretation, on how you perceive your religion, how you were taught religion. So actually, I think that it's like a fingerprint, mm-hmm. how you look at God. And I believe you have to make peace with that. You have to look at God as how to understand that you're looking at God as how you feel, not as who God is. And I don't blame religion. I blame more society that wants to give you one simple answer to everything, a black and white answer to everything. And what I actually really blame is not having this analytical thinking method throughout our lives. On the contrary, when we're kids, they kill our creative mind, they kill our imaginative mind, they try to teach us right from wrong in a very polarized way. So that's what I blame, actually.
Yeah, you know, it's really interesting. As soon as you were talking about that, I went to my daughter, who's 9 years old. She'll be 10 in a couple of months. When she was in kindergarten, pre-kindergarten, I remember her coming home and having learned some mathematics. And I remember being, you know, my wife's a teacher, and I was actually kind of angry. And my comment was, what are they doing teaching you math at such a young age? You should be drawing pictures and playing with blocks and playing with your friends in the playground. There's this mystery and wonder to play, and that is such another beautiful theme in your film.
Yes, exactly. I remember, I don't want to divert from our discussion, but there's this one of the best amazing TED Talks out there on the internet. It's one for Sir Ken Robinson.
I know the one you're talking about, I think.
The opening of that speech is a joke when he says, there was a school kid who was asked to draw something, and the teacher went to that school kid and told her, why are you drawing? She said, I'm drawing God. He said, but nobody ever seen God. So she replied, they will in a minute. So that's exactly the thing. School doesn't want you to think outside the box they want to put you in, because schools are more like factories. They are not produce the same products. You know what I mean?
I do.
So he's suggesting a different method to education, where it's more not more like a like a factory, but more of like a agriculture field. Every plant is different. Even if you're putting the same seeds, every seed is different and it generates something different. There are no two mangoes are exactly the same. Education is one of the worst things that can happen to us. And I remember this quote, I think it was from Mark Twain, when he said, the best thing you can do after you finish education is de-educate yourself from everything that you've learned in school.
Right. Yes, you just made me think of Yoda from The Empire Strikes Back. We have to unlearn what we have learned. Sorry, I'm a bit of a Star Wars fan. Not a huge Michael Jackson fan, but a huge Star Wars fan.
I tried, but I couldn't just get it. There's some barrier between me and fantasy films, because in Egypt we have a very rich life here, so fantasy is not the thing for Egyptians, I guess.
That's an interesting comment. Did you always want to make a comedy? was this meant to be, or was it? Did you go in not really sure where you were going to land? 11 drafts. It must have changed quite a bit.
Yeah. I remember the first draft was about this very fat guy who wants to dance Michael Jackson. Actually, this film, I tried to write this film without thinking of genre, without thinking of tone, without thinking of anything. Exactly opposite of everything I do. Like, all my past films are like a genre films. Like, every film, I tell you, this is a thriller, this is a comedy, this is a melodrama, this is a family film. But this film, I really wanted to liberate myself from thinking that systematically and from forgetting everything I learned from Robert McKee and Sid Field about script writing. And I wanted to really write this film with my heart, not with my mechanic brain.
Right.
With exactly what I'm going.
Well, I you hit it out of the park as far as I'm concerned, Hamera. As I said earlier, just such a delightful film and a beautiful story, but with profound and deep philosophical implications, theological implications. There's implications here for development, the way forward for politics. It's truly remarkable. Hey, are you worried at all about any kind of pushback?
What do you mean by pushback?
Will some people look at this and see this as, I don't know, not selling out, but irreverent?
To be honest, I made peace with the fact that I don't know where the film will go, what will it do, how people will perceive it. I have no idea, and I'm trying to tell that to myself every day and night because I can't sleep for a month now. I barely eat. Because I'm so tense about the film, but I was about doing it right more than how people perceive it, because I have no idea how people will perceive it, because it doesn't have any reference to it. Like, it's not like any other film I've ever seen, and that was the hardest part when I was writing. It's not similar to anything. So I literally have zero idea of how it will be perceived. Will it be provocative? I don't know. Will it be controversial? I don't know. Will it be touching? Will it be funny? Will it be doing this or that? And I think that's the bravest thing I've made in my career, is to write a film without knowing or expecting how it will land.
Well, I think, for what it's worth, I think it's all of those things that you just said, and I hope that you're going to be able to get some sleep, and I mean that sincerely. You're going to need a little bit of sleep coming to the film festival. It's a pretty crazy experience. It's so much fun. It's all consuming, and I'm sure it's going to be nerve-wracking, but I do hope you're going to be able to settle in a little bit and really enjoy it. It is the world premiere, is it not?
It is the world premiere. It will be the first time to show the film to a big audience. And I've been to Toronto before with one of my films. It was
wonderful.
And Toronto audiences are the best audience in the world.
Nice.
Obviously, one of them. And I really hope people will perceive the film the way you perceived it. And I really hope all the audience will be like you and will read the film like you did.
Well, I hope so too, and if they don't, we'll just have to make sure they listen to our interview, and we'll have convinced them otherwise, and they'll go back for a second viewing. Hamera, I am so delighted that we were able to chat at great length about your film. I hope we can do a part two. I wish you all the success in the world with this and what you're moving on to in your next projects. Thanks for your time today. We've been talking with Hamera Salama about his new film, brilliant and beautiful and intimate and delightful new film, Sheik Jackson. Thanks for your time today. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, David.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.